heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Yeah, I'll bring you back to that year 1979. Do you remember that show, that program with that classic line? The call is coming from inside the house. Yeah, that When a Stranger Calls was the movie, 1979. So the call was coming from inside the house. It comes back to that, people. The danger comes from within. Now, what happens is, I think we tend to get very, very complacent. That's another word we need to be using a lot, complacency. Complacency is a cancer. It will kill us, believe me. We're only as good as our last hurrah. And we see that, we should see that, and respect what is most important here to American values. But this danger that I continue to point out is coming from within. So really, the classic point of this here today, when we look at threats to the American Republic, is sure, you know, we talk all the time about big terrorist groups, and we talk about state powers out there and people who can pull us down and do harm to the Republic. And those are all forces, you know. I mean, there's always something about the case where, you know, you have to be right 100% of the time. So we have to be right. America has to be right all the time. If we're not, well, then we have potentially a mass casualty event. Whereas the person that wants to do harm doesn't necessarily have to be right all the time. They're just looking for that one in. That's something to remember. I think that's important. Again, and back to, if you take that back to complacency and what I'm talking about here, I think it's easy to find that we could easily fall into a pit here. And I think that's where we find ourselves right now, people. And there's a lot of reasons why I want to talk to you about today when the call is coming from inside the house. Maybe that's the right word to use, house, when it comes to House of Representatives. But now I'm talking the broader scope, of course, of America, right? There's a series of things I think we need to be in tune to. We need to have open eyes and look at this thing. And the first thing that we've got to discuss today, friends, is our political structure. And it really is politicians that fail to govern. They fail to legislate. So, you know, when you get up in the morning and all your energy is spent on how to nail someone to a cross, when all your energy, so think about that from the morning, from the moment your eyes open up in the morning, it's probably even before you have your coffee or anything else, you're thinking about what else can I do to get him? Isn't that what it is? And that's really a lot of these legislators, that's where they're at. All of their energy is spent on how to get the opposing force out of office. So they're not being productive. I can't imagine their constituents would, that's the way they would really want them to govern. You know, I mean, what does that accomplish at the end of the day? That just becomes, again, what I share with you all the time. It becomes a political circus, and it really is political entertainment, which is really part of our problem here. Is our political structure has become totally purely entertainment. It's been hijacked totally. It's not really serious governing. I mean, the media and the social elites and Hollywood elites and the political elites, and it's just pure entertainment. And you can see it. Everything we do has become just a circus. So our politicians that fail to govern, that fail to legislate, is the biggest problem we have from within. They're not taking it serious, people. Now, it's up to all of us. It's up to we, the people, to do something about it. If this is the way you want it, well, then, you know, you've got a seat then, a front row seat to the demise of this republic, because we will not be able to withstand this storm forever. There's no way we can continue. I mean, these are short-term problems we need to fix. If we don't fix this, it could very well crumble this republic. There's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. There shouldn't be any doubt in your mind either, people. You know, many of the other problems we're dealing with, the open borders we've talked about, it's become, again, a political hot potato, the whole thing. And of course, the Department of Homeland Security has, I mean, they're beyond overtaxed. I mean, they don't know what to do down there. The Border Patrol, I mean, they're struggling badly, Border Patrol is, and you know, because the systems are overtaxed. Now, you know, it's become, again, a game of fun between these two political adversaries of who's going to be the victor or not. And you're seeing this is really playing into the core of America. And this is a really big point here, is our American city. So our once great American cities are crumbling across the board. It's not just the California cities. It's not just Los Angeles and San Francisco. I got news for you. These crumbling cities are dotted all over the nation. They are from sea to shining sea, all the way up and down. All these great cities are starting to crumble. They're rotten from the inside out. And it's decades of neglect and decades of far left radical socialist policies and decades of people who want to do harm. I don't, how else, what else would their objective be? There can't be any other purpose to this. So the open borders playing into those cities and the core of that with homeless people and the structure of all of that, it's the decay of America. It's the internal threats to our system, which creates havoc. It creates an uncertainty. It creates, there's a disconnect and people start to feel it. And you can feel that. And about everybody you talk to today knows that this is not business as usual. Which is really kind of strange, actually, because economically we're doing very well as a nation. Well, that just comes back to American might. It comes back to American exceptionalism. It comes back to the American people they're unique. This republic is unique. And all of that plays to that end. I mean, we can do great things together, even with an oncoming storm, even when we're being knocked on our asses. But again, do we take that for granted? Right? It's that complacency factor when all these things are against us and they just have to be right one time, people. And then we've got big problems on our hands. So, you know, unless we can get them to legislate and secure the nation, which has nothing to do with being a xenophobe, that's just absolutely mental talk for the mental people. That's all that is. That makes no common sense at all, people. That's just trying to protect your family. That's such a bad thing. You know, what's that got to do? And, you know, we just talked about this here this past week about, you know, the Statue Harbor and the placard that's been hijacked about the, you know, send us your poor and you're incapable and you're downtrodden and you're lowest of lowest and we'll just groove up America. We'll just make this thing fly on the magic carpet, huh? You know, again, I if you missed that, my goal is to start a national movement and pull that placard the hell off that Liberty lady. Get it? I'm serious when I say that. We need to start a petition. This is something I plan to do. We want to start a petition, and we want to push that petition, and we want to readdress American ideals in a way that makes sense for real Americans. I think that starts with pulling that placard off and it's either that or the alternative idea that I continue to say to you, which some people don't really like to hear, and they kind of cringe when I say it, but to cut the statue up and put her in boxes and send her back to France. People say, oh my God, he said that. Well, that's the alternative to either get the placard off of there. Then what's our America? And why do I say this? Because it's been hijacked as a symbol from the socialist, Marxist, far left, radical nut jobs. Have hijacked that, and they're convincing middle America that we're supposed to lay down and play nice as all of this happens and destroys America, right? And so from there, friends, the other threats I think we need to point out is our cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is the new war front that's happening. And in a lot of ways, there's a lot of pieces to this now. I just did a show the other day on drones. And this was a big conversation as well. That's another front that we're going to be facing is drones internally here. That's another real big problem that has massive reach to create a mass casualty event. But cybersecurity is a problem when you got all these state actors out there trying to get us. We're going to wake up one morning and that's going to be a problem that you won't hear me because we won't broadcast because our grid will be down. Something would have happened and there'll be a panic in the land and that will happen. I see that day coming because we're complacent. We're not taking it seriously because they're too busy fighting each other. So they're not really governing and doing the things that are important to you and I, right? Our internal infrastructure is another problem. All of the internal infrastructure and the components of it, we take for granted. We're not investing into America, the Republic, you know, that's a problem. The propaganda campaign from social influencers, this is big because this is what really starts to change the American will. We got to have American will. We got to have American fight. We got to be able to get up and really look forward to what this republic stands for and what we're leaving for this next generation and the beauty and majesty of America, right? But there's a propaganda campaign to pull America down, and the social influences are heavy. And a lot of that starts with our universities and what they're teaching. And of course, that brings you then next to the destruction of America's history. Let's just pull all this down and ridicule everybody who's been part of the history of America, then you kind of see where you connect the dots here, people. I mean, you got to get this. You have to understand what they're doing. And these are all threats to our republic. And what's happened then is the political class and these dumb politicians, they prioritize social issues as the order of the day, to make sure that, you know, you can marry your gay lover and you can abort your kid at 9 months and you can, you know, it's all of these social issues across the board are the priority for these lunatics. And that's where they want the political class spent, where they can just continue to fight each other in this political perception. And then it's what I say, we've got this problem. It's the propaganda campaign. The propaganda campaign is alive. And so the questions you need to ask yourself today is, how vulnerable are we? How much has the world changed? And are we keeping up with these changes, friends? These are questions let's ask ourselves right now. Well, let me answer them. How vulnerable are we? We're damn vulnerable right now. How much has the world changed? Dramatically. And it's changing right this second even more. And are we keeping up with these changes? Hell no, in all capital letters. So there's your answer to the three questions. So now what you should do? Well, you should gulp. That should give you concern today. You know, after 9/11, our strategy was to take the fight to enemies abroad, so we didn't have to fight them here at home. That was the strategy. That's what we did here. That was the talking points. But that's no longer the world we live in, people. Our enemies are here, and many of them are in D.C. They're in our political government, quite frankly. And today's threats are in a borderless, digital, open, propaganda-driven societal world. Say that fast three times, and that puts us where we stand right now. The word is vulnerability. We are vulnerable in a big way. And again, the problem is they're reactive. They're not proactive. So when you take everything I just told you and you understand that they're reactive, it only becomes a problem when it's a problem. It's not a problem before then. That's like everything else in this country, because they're all Monday morning quarterbacks. So they wait for the you-know-what to hit the fan, and then they're the first ones on the mic or the camera professing that, you know, we come together as America. And that may be the only time we do come together as America, as was the case in 9/11. There hasn't been a moment since then that the country united to do something about anything here. Friends, today the federal government's biggest concerns should be attacks on attacks on our infrastructure and attacks on America's private and public cyberspaces and gaps in our physical borders. And yet there is a void of political fortitude to do what is right. It does not exist. And you look at all the factions that are happening and it spells trouble. So at the core of this discussion today is this: freedom conflicts with the evil that exists in men's hearts. We talk about good and evil all the time. And this is manifested in various ideologies that seek to dominate all of us here in America. So how can we understand this historic fight and prepare for what happens next? Our internal threats have the potential to pull this republic down, friends. That's the topic on The Voice of a Nation.
Listen to Malcolm, The Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Joining us here, Captain Stu Swirt is here. He's a retired naval officer, a defense contractor, columnist, contributor here at America Out Loud. Excited to have this talk with Stu today. He has, I believe, his fingers on the pulse. And I think he understands. If you just watch his threads and see what the man says out there, you'll get a sense he has. And, you know, this is somebody who has served our nation, understands the problems, the pitfalls. He has studied it. And that's what it takes, people. We have to study this thing. And a lot of the times as well, I remind everybody that if you want to really predict what's going to happen in the future, you've got to be able to look at our history, people. You can't destroy our history. You've got to be able to look at history as an indicator, at least, of where we're at and what can happen next. So, you know, I think there are a lot of factions that are in place to take this republic down. And it saddens me because I know that I'm right. And I know that at some point I'm going to say to myself, I tried to do X or I tried to warn them and, you know, nobody really listened. And so, because I know it's coming, and I feel it in my bones, I feel it in my soul, and I preach about this every day because, and it's a power within me, and I, you know, we're sort of at a loss sometimes as to what we can do, but what do you see when all things being equal at the distinct difference in this American experiment, because this is an American experiment, this has never been done in history, this America Republic. It's what I refer to as the majesty of America. It's a classic, the shine of city on a hill, this American experiment. So what do you see as the distinct difference in that American experiment as compared to previous failed nations or great powers in history, Stu?
The difference between America and the rest of the world, including the nations that have existed, pre-existed for hundreds of years, is that in America, we have maximum personal and economic liberty. That doesn't exist necessarily in all the other countries of the world, because most of those are run by their ruling classes, and it's the government that assumes all power. Thanks to English common law and its evolution after the Magna Carta and whatnot back in the 13th century, and then a lot of thinkers on the leading edge, John Locke and others in Britain, some in France. Well, that led us to a situation where we had people here in the colonies that were being oppressed, and they knew what tyranny of a central government meant to them personally in the way of taxation without representation and other cliches that we've learned in our American history classes over the years. America basically was founded as a government to protect the liberties of the people and the states, and to fence in the federal government and restrict the federal government's ability to exert tyranny, if you will, on its people. And that has led to freedom and entrepreneurialism and our ability to take in people from all over the world and turn them into Americans. And it's just a unique country, the likes of which the world has never seen. It's all because of the freedoms that the Constitution enshrines.
In a kind of an odd sort of way, Stu, our liberties that we talk about, our Constitution, the freedoms that we have as Americans here. And as you say, and also another interesting thing is that other people can become an American. That in itself is unique as well, because you can't really become a Frenchman or a Russian, but you can't, you know, that's unbelievably unique people. That's the melting power and potential of America. But in an odd sort of way, when it comes to our Constitution, our liberties, this also, those freedoms come with a cost and a price. And back to that complacency factor, Stu, I think that says that we have to be on our very best all the time, because I think that these liberties pose a greater danger to us in a weird sort of way. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Political liberty in particular, or freedom of speech, is a very prickly freedom, in that what that really means is people can say what they want as long as they're not shouting fire and in a crowded theater and all those other minimalist constraints on the First Amendment. But that also means you're going to get in political discourse some very crazy ideas like socialism and communism and fascism and all these other totalitarian-oriented ideologies, which are the antithesis of freedom. So you're going to get that constant play back and forth. And what we fail to recognize in the United States is not everybody is a good American. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is there are people who adhere to these foreign ideologies and seek to change the United States more in the direction of those ideologies. You know, there's always going to be people in the world who want to rule over and dictate what the rest of us say and do in all of our facets of life. That's the nature of some of these ideologies. And that ruling class doesn't like the notion of its underlings, its people being ruled, having the freedom to make choices and, in fact, to broom the ruling class whenever it makes sense to do so. So there's going to be always that conflict in America. And unfortunately, you know, there are a group of people who are, I would classify as not Americans, who live among us, who mm-hmm. whole lives are about trying to undermine our cultural and political institutions. It's been that way since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. So if you're listening to what we're saying here, people, you listen to what Captain Stu says there. I mean, it's interesting to me, because our greatest gift, our greatest advantage, the beautiful thing about America is what I think in a very odd sort of way could come back to really be our problem. I mean, this could be our destruction as well, because you see the groups that he's pointing out, these Marxist type groups with these, and there's a whole series of these groups, Stu, because you talk about them all the time, but you see, what they're doing is they're utilizing our liberty and our freedoms and our American way of life against us, because we make it easy to do that, because that's the nature of having an open republic such as this, because we have this discourse and the ability, like you just use the example of free speech, for instance. You know, I was thinking here in the last few days, with the president being on his trip there abroad, for instance, and I was thinking of the feud he was having with the London mayor, and I started to think about some of the ideologies that have now crept into our Congress and in major cities around the world, back again to Western freedoms, Western civilizations too. And of course, this becomes a big conversation, but it dawned on me that these people are getting inside of our heads, they're getting inside of our governments, they're getting inside of our programs, and that's how they kind of bore in there a little bit, and then we kind of have a problem, don't we?
No question about it. I like to simplify things greatly when I write and when I thread and whatnot, because there's a lot of complexity in the world and it's difficult to sort things out. Particularly from any historical perspective. One of the things I use as kind of a guiding light is there's a deceased gentleman by the name of Robert Conquest, who was a British historian and author. And he developed over time, based on his own personal experience and observation, what he called three laws of politics. And I like the second law in particular, because this hits to the heart of what exactly we're talking about right now. And that is, his second law says, any organization that's not explicitly right-wing sooner or later becomes left-wing. And what that means is, you were talking earlier about if we don't guard against the evil within, we can be subverted. Well, that happens in all of our organizations, all of our cultural entities, our cultural and American organizations that have existed since the beginning. If they're not explicitly oriented towards conservative values and so forth, they can be infiltrated from within, subverted, and changed. And it happens all the time. It happens in public education. It's happened in academia. It's happened in Hollywood. It happens in the federal bureaucracy. Every major organization has been subverted by the left over the years. And that's why many people feel the discomfort that we feel, because we have seen it happen and we don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is this battle of hard left, hard right, it seems. And I've been trying to point out to folks in recent days, Stu, that I don't really see this fight as a Republican and Democrat problem. It's much bigger than that. And a lot of people don't really grab onto that, but I don't, because really a lot of people are set on that Republican-Democrat fight locally. And the words get very ugly. And you know from being on various social media outlets that people are, I mean, there's a lot of ugliness out there. And then it becomes the name calling, and then you end up with this war. And that's what we're sort of seeing internally here. We've become very, very divisive. But I think, again, back to our enemies here and our internal structure, they know where our weakness is. They know how to tap into this weakness, and they know. And then, as you say, the left, they're playing right into it with all of these social issues. And, you know, I shake my head all the time when I see people fighting about these things. You know, I said years ago, the discussion of abortion or the discussion of this gay marriage stuff, it consumes our political class and it consumes precious time. And that's not what we really need politicians doing. I really wish government would stay out of social issues from my vantage point. How do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel differently about that, or do you think they have a place in social issues?
I think we should adhere to the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment has been discarded by the left because it suits them. Cultural issues are the left's way to add a division. Exactly right. Divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. The federal government should not be involved in social issues. They should be remanded to the states, just like most of the federal programs, by the way, should be left to the states for implementation purposes, too. Everything's gone outside the boundary of what the original Constitution had and the founders had in mind.
Yeah, that's key what you say there. That's the crux of the problem we're having now, because these conversations, Stu, you would agree with me. I mean, they've hijacked a lot of people's thinking because they're so bent on these problems and these little fires that are blowing out all over the place. And, you know, I think it's really where the right has hurt themselves, though, because I said years ago that they are hurting themselves by continually pushing their agenda as the supposed political force of small government, which is a joke, actually, because the Republicans are as much as big government as the Democrats are. But that's been the conversation point out there as long as we've been doing this thing. They don't really get it, and they're feeding into the same narrative, and they don't know how to extract themselves. In other words, the left has pulled them in, but they've allowed the left to do that, and I think we end up with this cultural clash and this divide, which is, like, really nasty. And then we're not focused on what's important. In the meantime, these enemies out there that we're talking about, Stu, they got to be sitting there laughing as hard as they can, because we're fighting about whether two gay people should get married, or whether, you know, somebody should have a kid or not have a kid, or what exactly should happen, because the feds are so busy trying to dictate all that in our lives that it's become a cancer here. This is a real problem, isn't it?
No question about it. The dilemma is, most Americans, when you look at another American, you don't see an enemy. You see somebody who, you know, who lives, maybe your next door neighbor lives in your same town or whatnot, or you see them on TV, what have you. You hear them talk and you think, they think just like I do. Well, that's really not the case. Most people don't understand that there is a subset of Americans that really aren't Americans at the core from an ideology point of view. And they've been, you know, they're more of like a hive mind. I mean, there's different strains of the left. You know, there's socialists, there's communists, there's Marxists, whatnot. And all these people, you know, they don't march to a single drum, but they are allied with each other towards the same end, which is ultimately changing the the foundation of America, getting rid of the Constitution, and doing all these cultural Marxist claptrap implementations. You know, but if you really go back to where this all began, I mean, most of this us versus them started with the old Soviet Union, where we had the Comintern trying to push communism on the rest of the world after the Russian Revolution. And there was a us versus them through the Cold War. And there were fellow travelers in the U.S. that tried to push the ideology on America. And in fact, there was an establishment of the Communist Party USA, literally here in this country. And because of our freedoms, we allowed it to exist. We didn't ban it. We didn't persecute the people and so forth. But they had goals and objectives, and their goals and objectives were clearly stated years and years ago. And if you look at what those objectives were, good grief, they've achieved a lot of them through our current institutions and through our current political party, namely the Democrat Party. I'm sure people will have remembered the 1963 posted list of communist goals from Florida House of Representatives. There's about 43 goals, and some of those goals are just amazing when you walk right down the list.
Yeah. I've been pushing those goals out there, by the way, reminding people about those communist goals out there because they exist, and we got them on the platform at America Out Loud. I like what you say there, because of our freedoms, we allowed it to exist. That should make everybody think.
Just let me hit two or three of those goals and see what you think. First one is present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. That's right out of the Communist Party. Okay? Here's another one. Eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the ground that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. Gee, have we heard that before? How about this one? Get a load of this one. Discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI. Hey, we had a former communist, James Comey, who was the FBI director. Good grief. Or capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. Now, if you looked at the Democrat Party plank and you looked at these 43 goals, in fact, I've done some articles comparing them one-to-one. It's amazing. The Communist Party USA goals and the Democrat Party goals in the United States are virtually identical. And most people don't even know that.
I mean, you just listen to what you put out there, those examples, and you just have to, it should get you, folks. It should blow you away. I mean, what's really happening here? And that's why, you know, it's important to point out when you hear Stu here put this out there, and then you hear people like Karen Schoen, our educator dean on the platform, a Colonel Jim Warshak, Sid Bowditch, you hear all of these patriots out there that are putting truth out there, Stu. And they're all onto this thing. They're all people that are onto it. And we continually try to warn America and warn the Republic what's happening here, Stu. I think what I'd like to do is spend a few minutes with you and talk about some answers, how to be proactive in all of this, because I think we've proven our case by far that we have a lot of enemies from within. Again, I believe the biggest enemy from within is the political class. Make no mistake about it, people. I'll tell you that till my last breath. That is going to be the cancer that kills us. It's the political class in power. That's what it is. We can handle the rest of it, I'm telling you. We can handle the rest of it. If we get them to do what they need to do and govern, my God, life in America would be a sparkling, shiny, amazing, shining city on a hill. It would be blown away. Nobody would be able to keep up with this republic. I can assure you of that. So with this divide, I hear a lot of people give a lot of people credit, like a lot of the candidates that are in the 2020 election that are running for president, for example. And there are a lot of people who are supporting the left agenda. And I've studied some of them. I've watched what they've said when I can stand it, because they drive me crazy. And I can't really watch them for long periods of time, because then I have to go to the emergency room because I break out into hives. So it's very limited to how long I can watch these clowns, Stu, you see? You know? But I see that I don't think a lot of them, and I'll tell you this, I do not believe the great many of them, a good piece of them, I don't know how many. I don't think they have a flipping clue of what they're playing in. I think they just think it's cool to talk about all of these social issues. I think they think it's cool to bash the current president. They think it's cool to be to subvert the Constitution and the way we're doing it. And they think it's all just, it's fashionable for them because they're in this talking point of being a Democrat running for the president of the United States. I don't think a lot of them really understand the ramifications. I don't give a lot of them a lot of credit to think they're that intelligent that they have figured this out. You disagree with that statement?
Not at all. In fact, what you're describing are, in my mind, are symptoms of the problem.
That's right.
These are symptoms. What is the real problem? You mm-hmm. you hit the nail on the head when you said political class, that phrase. Think about who is in the political class. Let's take a perfect example right from the Democrat Star Wars bar scene, who, you know, the group of Democrats that are running for president here. Take the guy that's in lead right now, Joe Biden. That guy is the consummate member of the political class. That's all he's ever been in life. Now, what is a politician? Do they actually do anything? Do they build anything? Do they create anything? Do they do anything beneficial for people? No, they don't. They have two jobs. First job, get reelected. That's job number one, get reelected. And by the way, everything else is negotiable beyond that. Their second job is make sure they get enough money to be reelected from donors, from gullible people, and so forth. Do they solve problems? No, they don't. And what has really opened my eyes is just over the last couple of years is watching Donald Trump operate. That guy is not a politician. He's not a member of the political class. And the comparison between him and the other inhabitants of D.C. is as stark as it could possibly be. Trump is a problem solver. He wants to get things done. The political class could care less about getting things done. It's all about what is the political import of the moment. For the Democrats, it's all about reassuming political power and getting control over us. You know, you talked about some of these Democrat Star Wars bar scene candidates making these outlandish claims. I mean, these people have no real world experience, and they're out there saying things that you know. The best filter would be is, you know, they make a claim. Well, we're going to go with the Green New Deal. What you need to do is look at it from the point of view. Well, what would that mean? What it really means is it empowers the government to control the U.S. economy even more so than it already does. So if you look at all these issues from the point of what will be the end result. That is the way to sort out whether these people know what they're talking about or not.
Yeah. The whole thing is so illogical. You shake your head. You don't really know what to think about some of this. I ponder this a lot, Stu, and think in the terms of how do we change this trajectory? You know, at one point I need to make on what you said right there, and I want people to understand what Stu just put out there is gospel truth, and I'll tell you why I know that is because you take with Trump what he just did with Mexico, with which I pointed this out on the network here just a few days ago with the tariffs on Mexico. Stu, there is no way any politician would have made that leap to tie the two together. Nobody would have done it in a general election, knowing that it could hurt economically. It could be there's some pain associated with that. In other words, what he did was long-term thinking. That does not fit the political class whatsoever. That is proof number one, Stu, as to what you're saying.
That's precisely right. He's looked at the problem and is looking for different kinds of solutions. And what is the political class response to those tariffs? Almost uniformly, everybody, even Fox News, says, well, you know, who's going to pay the tariffs? It's going to be Americans. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but that's only true if the goods that are tariffed are actually purchased. Mm-hmm. Because there's other decisions that can take place when you increase tariffs. You know, if the cost is too much, you might go to another source and you won't buy them, and therefore you won't pay those tariffs. The goal is to put pressure on the provider of those goods, in this case, Mexico. So if we don't buy as many because people don't want to pay the tariffs, or if we delay buying because we think maybe in the future the tariffs will go down, it's still going to hurt Mexico. And that's what the goal is, not the fact that Americans are going to have to pay a tariff if they buy something.
Yeah, we'll pay. I mean, when you said the word pay, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I can, you know, I love the way these clowns just hijack the headlines. And I'm thinking, yeah, we'll pay all right. When people start to pay with their lives, people, because of this border, it's beyond a cancer. It is a mode of destruction for this country. I mean, people, you've got to open your eyes and your ears. And these clowns that are running for office who think otherwise, these people are not fit to have a conversation, let alone run the office, if they can't see that. And then the denial. And you know that, people, because they've gone from the word of crisis, and they've talked about a made-up crisis and a humanitarian crisis and a civil crisis and a this crisis and a that crisis. They're trying to dance around the fact that we're screwed. We're screwed. Either way, the word crisis is there, but they keep changing the word in front of crisis to make themselves feel good for the day, for their talking heads and the money and the globalist money that comes through these people. You know, I wish people would open up their eyes. All right. So, Stu, what's the answer now? Because let's take just the last few minutes here, and let's talk about what's the alternative? I mean, what do we do here? I know elections and, you know, have consequences and getting the right people into office. And, I mean, we're obviously all Americans should be concerned. What's the 1, 2, 3 things you would say to the Republic right now that need to happen, please?
Well, there's no easy answer. In fact, it's going to require a long slog. It took a long slog to get us to our present predicament. What we've got to do is return to the cliche of limited government, small government, and citizen politicians, just like the founders envisioned when they wrote the Constitution long ago. What does that mean in practical terms? It means we've got to get rid of the political class. And I'm not talking about just Democrats. There are Republicans who are just as bad from a do-nothing point of view, or from a grifting and self-aggrandizement point of view, as Democrats are. We've got to get rid of them. And how do we do that? We've got to find people who are not politicians, who are smart, who are worldly, but who are clever enough on their feet to be able to deal with the political class and run against them. That's one thing. Another thing we've got to do is we've got to change some of our processes and laws to make it easier for citizen politicians to run. And what I mean by that is we've got to have term limits. People talk about that all the time.
That's right.
But it's the political class that fights tooth and nail against term limits because it's a dagger pointed right at their hearts.
That's right.
And they have all kinds of reasons why. The government's too complex. We need people who know what they're doing. There's all kinds of different ridiculous reasons. Mm. We've got to have term limits. Mm. Now, some people talk about this notion of Article 5 Convention of the States. I personally don't like that idea because if anything we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is that the left is capable of corrupting virtually every political process. And if we had a convention of the states, no matter who was assigned as delegates, you don't think the left and the so-called, for example, Silicon Valley left-wing billionaires wouldn't pull out all the stops, the Soroses of the world would put all the stops to corrupt that, to take, you know, to try to capture some of those key delegates and push the dialogue and the discussion and the end result in the direction that's favorable to the left, you darn tootin' they would. One thing we have to do is preserve the Constitution and force our elected politicians to enforce the existing laws that we have in the books. We've gotten away from that. So if we do those kinds of things, that's a good start, but it's not going to be a snap of the fingers or wave of the magic wand. It doesn't happen that way. We have to be consistent and persistent over time to make the changes that are necessary.
Well, friends, Captain Stu Swirk puts it out there in a way that you can understand clearly. Thank him for his service to this nation and for all of his contributions here, for sure. You know, what an outstanding conversation that should have all of us thinking at this point, what the dangers are, how internal conflict is inevitable, and what we need to do to take it back. This American experiment is at a very, very critical point. We continue to point that out, not to be alarmist, but to be ready and to guard our republic, to guard the majesty of America. This isn't worth gambling away. There's only one America. I've told you, I'll tell you again, there's not another America coming anytime soon, people. This is it, right here. This is what God has gifted to this planet, and this is it. So you've got one America here, and we need to do everything we need to do to keep it secure from sea to shining sea. Friends, on the Voice of a Nation, you'll hear this show, let me remind you, every day, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the weekday, Monday through Friday. And again, such incredibly unique voices continue to be on the airwaves here with us. But I want to also tell you, uniquely with this show, if you do happen to miss the 6 p.m. because you're out for a nice dinner, well, the good news is the following morning, 8 a.m., you can hear it on the morning drive. And that's the best place. Now, more than 70% of people listen to talk radio on their smartphones now. It's where people do just about everything with the smartphones. And I want to recommend you can do exactly that on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Or you can go to iHeartRadio right on your dashboard in your car or our media player anywhere in the world and listen to this program here or any of the outstanding program on America Out Loud. Our panel next will take this conversation forward.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance, because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier, and gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
800-978-3901. Once again, that's 800-978-3901.
Panel of voices here today, friends. Sid Bowditch is here. Sid's book, A Rush to Judgment, A Journey with Trump, God and Love. And this was a book that really was about the Trump presidency, the campaign, which became the presidency in 2016. It was part of that ground campaign that got Trump into office. So he has his own unique perspective on things. And another one that always has a unique perspective is our very own Ava Armstrong. She's a political commentator, radio personality here, and a great author on Amazon, the America Out Loud bookstore, which is a great place, friends. You'll find all kinds of books, including Sid's book, Ava's books, and all of these fantastic experts, and all of our top guests as well, you'll find in the America Out Loud bookstore. Connects you right to Amazon, and you can get it all right there, people. So, internal threats to the American Republic. Well, we laid out quite the case there with Captain Stu Swirk. And Sid, I got to ask you a straightforward question, just simple question, and you heard the whole talk here. What do you deem maybe something different that we didn't talk about, or maybe a different angle on what we talked about, but what do you deem is the biggest threat to the United States?
Is the conservative complacency. Because what comes along with being complacent is allowing the demise of Christianity and allowing the liberal left to take Christianity out of our government, out of our homes, out of our schools. And what goes along with that, naturally, is our moral character. And we've watched our moral character decline ever since the 60s, when the hippie liberal culture first started to grow and really took off and really just ran from there forward right up until today.
Yeah. And you mentioned, now I see a constant thread with you. You truly, I know you believe that in your heart, because you've said that in one way, shape, form, or another. I mean, you believe that moral decay is destroying, huh?
Positively, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We see it every day. I mean, right. the decisions that are made by the left are a direct reflection of moral character. Just they don't have moral character. What's the demise of our moral character? Mm-hmm. And even in our culture and to our youth, continues to just grow.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I was thinking as you were talking, when you started to talk about the right, Ava, one of the things I think you know that I tend to look at the whole political class as one big cancer. It's the cancer of the left and the cancer of the right. And when Sid started to talk about the right, I was thinking he was going, I mean, I like the way he talked about the moral decay, because that is clearly a problem with our social apparatus, which Captain Stu and I discussed. It's easy to blame the left, but in many kind of ways, shouldn't we blame the right as well, Ava? Because the right, they've allowed the left to do all of this. As I've said repeatedly too, you've heard me be a talking point for the fact that the left owns all of these operations. They're running our social fabric. They're running the moral operation. They're running the sound bites on the news channels. They're running all of the conversations. And isn't that the problem with the right that is guilty of that, you know?
Oh, exactly. The right has not stood up and really fought this. And it's very interesting because the founding fathers, when they created our government, or the concept of our government, power was to be held by the citizens. And I was very glad to hear Stu recognize the part that these people are supposed to go and serve and then go back home. President Trump is a citizen president. And you can see how difficult it was for him to actually be recognized as president. He still isn't to this day by half of this country. This is outstanding to me. This is such a big red flag, okay? He came out of nowhere. He's a businessman, and he's now president. And there's half of the country resisting the fact that he's president. Now, if that's not tyranny, I don't know what is. We have unalienable rights, mm-hmm. and they're endowed by a creator, mm-hmm. okay? There's no other country in the world that has that sort of system of rights. Okay.
Wow. That's a phenomenal point to blow both of you to bring that point to the table. I mean, what we're saying here, people, this is important now, that we are a product of God Almighty. That's what's being said here, you see? So our rights don't come from Washington, D.C. and from government. And what you say there and the way you put the inalienable rights, Ava, that's really pointed to this whole conversation, isn't it now? I mean, that's...
Well, and Sid touched upon it as well. He said our laws are based on Judeo-Christian values. So we don't teach this anymore in school. That's not establishing a religion. I have this argument kind of frequently in social media. We need to teach our children mm-hmm. where our form of government came from. How was it conceived? And we don't do this anymore. All we do now is say how bad America is and, you know, the revisionist American history, the founders are evil, you know, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, what you're speaking about, Ava, is the bedrock of the American Constitution. That's the bedrock
exactly.
of the whole deal.
Exactly.
And they're not, they're not following that up at all. And again, the Judeo-Christian values in God we trust, what we're about. But again, they've taken prayer and God and every other element out of everything. They're kneeling at your sports games now. They're pissing on the flag. They're burning the flag. And they're pissing on the Constitution, I guess would be a better way to say it, maybe. And this is really the destruction.
What's really interesting is they do provide prayer rooms for Islamic children.
Political Islam. They're gradually taking a foothold in our country, and now we have two of them, two Muslims in Congress, and look at what they're doing. They do nothing but bash our president, bash America, bash Israel. I mean, just it's horrific, really. And if we don't start to pay attention to that, mm-hmm. that's right. going to hurt us as well.
Well, that's a piece of the internal threat. I mean, there's a lot of pieces to the threats. And, you know, the bigger threat of Islam, as big as that is, that many Christians would say is a problem, is probably not even going to be our downfall at this early juncture. Maybe down the road that changes, guys. I don't know. But I think we've already pointed out on this show, Ava, that the political class is our biggest cancer right now. You know, one of the things that Stu and I talked about was the potential, again, of term limits. We can't get the political class to agree to this. One of the things I want to suggest to people that I think needs to happen is that as we elect new people to office, let me encourage all of you out there to let's mandate that it's mandatory. Whether it's a Democrat, Republican, or an independent is not my point here. But let's mandate that they have a mindset and approve that we want term limits. We want constitutional term limits in play that they can serve for a period of time and then get out of office. And because if we don't start to mandate that, Ava, I think we're going to have other, because they're never going to pass this legislation themselves, because it's like, you know, it's like honoring, it's giving yourself a raise or not giving yourself a raise, or because, and like he said, they only battle for the next election. That's their number one priority, Ava. That's it.
No, actually, Ted Cruz is putting forth a bill that will be involving term limits.
That is another thing he is doing. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Ted Cruz is doing that. He's spearheading that.
What does it have a shot or a chance, though, is the question, right?
Well, I mean, we need to bring it up. We need to have somebody, you know, like him to bring it up.
If you're right, if we get him to bring it up and we can rally behind him with popular opinion and push that right envelope, that's a chance we'd have, right? Push the legislation.
Yeah. I never thought I would live to see the day when the Electoral College was talked about, in this manner. The Electoral College is the one of the pieces that really keeps our country together. Mm-hmm. It actually normalizes the vote. It equalizes the vote amongst, you know, large populated areas and sparsely populated areas. I mean, one vote, one citizen, that's a constitutional right. And in some states right now, that's not even happening. Mm-hmm. So there are various states that are changing their modes and methods of voting. I'm really terrified at this moment in time with what I'm looking out over the landscape. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, why are some people trying to make government into a monarchy? Mm-hmm. And I know the founders wrote about this. They said this is very dangerous to do. Don't idolize these politicians or people. They're people and they're not rulers. And it's so obvious how we try to do this. We even do it with Hollywood stars. You know, we build them up and then we kill them. You know, in the end, we take them down, you know. And it's an odd kind of a human thing. But the founders wrote about this and they told us to beware of that wanting of a monarchy, that wanting of one ruler. That's going to be the death of our republic.
Yeah. Well, because it really comes back to the political class and the greed, the corruption that they desire people. That's what they're after. And that's a lot of the reason some of these cats run for office. But it's always the reason they want to return to office. And it's why they take the next election. And it's why Captain Stu said, well, it really is the number one objective is to get reelected. You have to really think about this, people. Now, why should that be their number one objective when, as Ava had pointed out, the power of having citizen representation, which is really what the framers envisioned. That was the whole concept of America. It wasn't to become, you know, endless career-driven politicians. Early on, people served. They got in, they got out. They got in, they got out. And they served in different ways to this republic. But the political class has taken it over as a form of greed. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it every day in all walks of life. Of course, the federal government, the framers envisioned a much smaller footprint that they wouldn't control every facet of your life. And that's kind of the intersection we find ourselves at right now in America. There's a real struggle to the political class and what they want. So our job here, people, on the Voice of a Nation, is to fight that. It's to fight that ruling class. It's to fight that monarchy. It's to fight those people who have hijacked America and who have a different vision for America. They see America as their America, more of a globalist America. That's a different kind of America. They see a different America that is godless, that is more Marxist, that is controlled by the power elite. That's the America they see. It's time to get involved and get loud.